It's not uncommon to live in a neighborhood for many years without learning the names of those who live up and down our street. With busy and demanding lives, it takes intentional effort to become acquainted with folks who would otherwise remain complete strangers. Today on Insight for Living, Chuck Swindoll will remind us that isolationism has become a systemic problem, not only in our neighborhoods, but in our churches as well. We're looking at the history of the ancient Hebrews to discover ways in which to build healthy relationships with other believers. Chuck has titled today's message, Operation Assimilation.
God brought Moses from the burning bush to the land of Egypt, 80 years old, to lead the Exodus. It sounds exciting when you look back, being delivered from bondage, but when you're there and all of your roots are there and your grandparents were there and your great-grandparents were there, it's tough to leave the familiar, especially when the only thing stretching out in front of you is wilderness. And so they left with a divided heart. Some of them weren't really sure it was the right thing. Oh, they all wanted to be out of the bondage, but they didn't want the inconvenience of the wandering. And so they came to the Red Sea and they complained. Some were ready to go back then. They went through the Red Sea and they got into the wilderness and they complained because they got tired of manna. They went through the manna experience and some of them complained because there wasn't fresh, sparkling water from the oasis of Egypt. It was this water that came out of the rock, sort of brackish. They got tired of that. And they kept talking about going back, going back, going back to the familiar. And finally, they came to the land of Canaan, which is called the Promised Land, because God promised it to them. They sent in some spies, and 10 came back and said, "No way can we take that land." 2 of them said, "Oh, yes, we can." The people listened to the 10. The majority ruled. And the majority got their way, and God stepped in and said, "That's enough." Believe it or not, he took the life of the rest of those older people, age 21 and up, and he waited patiently through 40 years so that those who were once 20 were now 60 when we get to Joshua. And a whole new generation of people are meeting around a brand new leader named Joshua. There is one great difference now. They are now together. They've never been so together as they are now. They have a 40-year memory as those carcasses were spread through the wilderness. Each one that dropped off the scene was a reminder that God means what he says about his promises. So they came to the land of Canaan the second time with their ears perked up, ready to listen. Now it came about after the death of Moses, Joshua 1 begins, that the Lord spoke to Joshua the son of Nun, saying, "Moses, my servant, is dead." God is a realist. We are the ones that want to hang on to that which is lost and gone. God is always on the move, always looking ahead, always leading us forward. The people would have stood there by that memorial the rest of their days if they had had their way. But God said to Joshua behind the veil of privacy, "Joshua, Moses is dead." Remember this, will you, ladies and gentlemen? Remember this. When a man of God dies, nothing of God dies. When a man or woman of God passes off the scene, nothing of God passes off the scene. When a man of God is used in a special way for God's work and then is removed, nothing of God is removed. God continues to push his people forward. And we people tend to always want to hang on to the way we were, to the way it was, because it's much safer. There's no risk. It's all a history. There's no prophecy involved. God says to Joshua, "Moses is dead. Now therefore arise and cross the Jordan, you and all this people, to the land which I am about to show you, the sons of Israel. Every place on which the sole of your foot treads, I have given it to you, just as I spoke to Moses." Isn't that a great thought? Put yourself in Joshua's sandals for a moment. He had seen Moses at his best and at his worst. He had seen the miracles that seemed to flow from the staff of Moses. as year after year he led the people, and now he hears God strangely, mysteriously assuring him, "As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. Nothing of me died when Moses died. Now, Joshua, take the land." He even spells out the boundaries in verse 4. If you are given to details, you'll love the verse. You can check it on an ancient map and find that it marks it off rather clearly. That's the land of Canaan. "Joshua, take off. I'm going with you, and the people are going. You will not fail." Verse 5, "No man will be able to stand before you all the days of your life. Just as I have been with Moses, I will be with you. I will not fail you." The word means to abandon or forsake you. The word means to loosen one's grip on something. "I will not turn away from you. In fact, I have you in my hands, and I will not loosen my grip." What a promise. I find in this first chapter of Joshua no less than 4 helpful principles for us today. And the first one is in these first 5 verses. They determined the direction of their future. The first reason these people were able to move together in this new beginning is that they had a clear direction they were to go. You see, from the time they had left Egypt in the Exodus, they were all divided. Some kept saying, "We need another leader." Some were saying, "We need to go back." Some were saying, "We're going to die in the wilderness." Some were saying, "No, we're going to Canaan." A few were saying, "Couldn't we get another diet? Isn't there another way to live? We're going to perish in this wilderness." A mixed multitude. But you don't find that when you get to Joshua. You find one simple directive. "Joshua, you're going into the land which I am giving you." God led them without question, verse 2, verse 3, verse 4. God clearly declared and explained the journey. And he set aside a leader to get them on their way. Now, I have a confession to make to you. I struggle with the role of leading at times. I appear to be a strong natural leader, but underneath my system, there are some uncertainties at times. I am what you might call a reluctant strong leader. At times, I would like very much to shift the load to someone else. I believe I can say before God in all honesty that leading this congregation is no ego trip for me. The ego trip at times would be giving up the job and doing something a lot easier. But I reluctantly have had to face the fact that that's not God's will for me. He has a staff around me. He has a body of elders in our leadership. He has a larger body of people who care about and pray over and think about where we're going. But really, in the bottom line, he wants to use me as a focal point in getting us in a direction. Part of the reason you haven't heard a direction is that I have not known what it is. That's simple, isn't it? I think if we were to pass a clipboard up and down the pews of our congregation, answering the simple question as you sign your name to it, "What's the direction of this ministry?" we would probably get 1,000 answers, maybe more. The most common answer would be, "I don't have the slightest idea." That's part of the reason we're not together. Now I'm serious. In order for a congregation to pull together as a unit, there need to be some carefully defined goals and objectives. Motivation will come. I think unity will emerge when we get a clear objective, and we're working through that as a staff, as a body of leaders. We care about that. But we're not ready to jump into it with both feet and say, "This is it," and then change it next year. No, we think we need in our congregation a clear directive. And I want to tell you before we go much further, one of them is the assimilation of this congregation. We're not satisfied just to build another balcony and put another 1,000 people in this building. We're not going to do that. It may involve lifting a segment of our congregation out and starting another church in another location with a ministry that is very similar to this one, except it's in miniature because it's smaller. The right kind of leadership, the right kind of vision, but doing it in another location as we have done in the past. But we think it's unwise to add more services or build more room for more worshipers to come, to sit, to listen, to leave. We have a lot of homework ahead of us in the assimilation of this ministry. But you know what takes a leader? It takes a person at the point out front. I've thought about the Reformation, and you know I don't think of territory in Germany when I think of the Reformation. I don't think of a section of Switzerland, though it was impacted by the Reformation. I don't even think of the Roman Church and what happened to it, though it was certainly changed or impacted by the Reformation. You know who I think of? I think of people. I think of Luther. I think of Calvin. I think of Zwingli. I think of Savonarola. I think of Melanchthon. I think of the ancient days of Huss and Wycliffe. I think of John Knox in Scotland. I think of people who were bold, big-thinking, broad-minded men who had a direction and led the congregation or led the people in that direction. Same thing happened in the Great Awakening. I think of Whitfield. I think of Jonathan Edwards. I think of John Wesley, of Samuel Davies, Daniel Marshall. I think of the Second Awakening that began during the days of the American Revival, right up to this present day of Billy Graham and other men. The same is true in parachurch ministries. Who do you think of when you think of Campus Crusade for Christ? Probably think of Bill Bright. You know who I think of when I think of Forest Home Conference Center? I think of a lady who was born way ahead of her times, who wore funny little hats and dressed to fit to kill and just impacted people all over that Presbyterian church in Hollywood. Her name was Henrietta Mears, who dreamed Forest Home, I think, years before it ever came to pass. When you think of the Navigators, you think of Dawson Trotman. You can go right down the line, Hudson Taylor and China Inland Mission, Cam Townsend and Wycliffe Bible Translators, because there are leaders along the way, and many of them reluctant leaders. Men and women who would not have volunteered for the task if they had been paid double what they were paid for it. Most important thing in beginning to draw us together is to have a direction. God gave it to Joshua, and you pray these days that God will continue to give it to us. And as it comes, you, of course, will be right involved in it. And I am confident there will be a cooperative spirit to follow. Now, there's a second principle I find in this passage. Notice in verse 6, be strong and courageous. Isn't it interesting he said that to Joshua right after laying out the plan? You know why? Because he could hear Joshua's knees knocking. It happens under the robe that they wore in those days. He began to listen to God's plan. He got scared, and he said, be strong and very courageous. And in case you missed it, he says it again in verse 7, only be strong and very courageous. And he says it again in verse 9, only be strong and very courageous. And he says it again in verse 18 at the end of the chapter. The people come back in sort of an antiphonal voice saying, be strong and courageous. They're now telling the leader the same thing. Be strong and courageous. The word is interesting. The first word, strong, speaks of strength in one's hands, as in the grip or the forearm, the strength in the arms. And courageous is a word that means strength in the legs, interestingly. It speaks of the whole body being stout and strong against a force moving against it. The same thing is true in an assembly like ours. Brings up the second principle. Let me give you that. They accepted the challenge without fear of failure. Four times they are given the words, be strong and courageous. They accepted the challenge without fear of failure. The beautiful thing about this plan is that it had all the makings of a failure. The reason it's beautiful is because that's the kind of thing that God must do for us. Men and women can't do it for themselves. And the more impossible the task, the greater the glory goes to God for pulling it off. Now, there are certain people who seem to gravitate toward those impossible tasks as they see the finished thing in their mind. Some of you are in your own business. Some of you are in ministry out there, and you continue to perceive the accomplished fact as you press on to get the job done. One was Winston Churchill. I love this story about him. There was that cabinet meeting in the darkest days of the war, just after France had capitulated. Mr. Churchill, as he then was, outlined the situation in starkest colors. Quite literally, Britain stood alone. There was a silence when he had finished speaking. On the faces of some, there was written failure and despair. And there were some who would have given up the struggle. Mr. Churchill was silent for a moment. Then he looked around over his glasses at that dispirited company, and he said, "Gentlemen, I think it is rather inspiring." Isn't that fantastic? Everybody's saying, "Oh, we're not going to make it. We're not." I think it is rather inspiring. It takes a person like that. That's a nut that'll think like that, you know? A person who can see it all out there and say, "Hey, I'm inspired by that." You realize why you don't like it on your job? You're bored. The inspiration, the challenge of it is gone. The excitement of the impossible is absent as it's all reachable. You've got it all wired. Some of the finest people in America lose it in their work because they finally get bored. One of the reasons we tend to be divided in this congregation is that some are getting a little bored. The finest in music, the finest in facilities, the finest in conveniences. But just a little bored. God is saying to us these days, there is a brightness out there, and it is beyond you right now, and it's a challenge that is going to mean for some of your people a whole new frame of thinking. And I warn you, before we get very deeply into it, it's going to mean some changes in our lives, the way we think, habits we formed. Well, look at what happens when he comes out from behind the veil, verse 10. Then Joshua commanded the officers. Oh, that's new. That's a new one. Up till now, he's been shaking, quaking with fear, hearing God give those promises. Now he's got the motivation. Now he's standing up before the people giving commands. Get your pencil ready, because I want you to mark a couple of things. New things you maybe haven't seen before. Verse 11, pass through the midst of the camp and command the people, saying, prepare provisions for yourselves. Underline that. It's not going to be done for you. You'll need to do something for yourself in this new plan. For within 3 days you are to cross the Jordan to go in to possess the land which the Lord your God is giving you to possess it. Now note, to the Reubenites, to the Gadites, to the half-tribe of Manasseh, Joshua said, remember the word which Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you, saying, the Lord your God gives you rest and will give you this land. Remember that? Your wives, your little ones, and your cattle shall remain in the land which Moses gave you beyond the Jordan, but you shall cross over before your brothers in battle array. Notice they are fighting for one another. All your valiant warriors shall cross over, and underline this, you shall help them. Here's something you're to do for yourself. That's verse 11. Here's something that will help you relate to your brothers. Forget the distinction of the tribes. We're in this together. Verse 15, until the Lord gives your brothers rest as he gives you, and they possess the land which the Lord your God is giving to them, then you shall have rest. You shall go to your land and possess it, which Moses the servant gave you before the Jordan toward the sunrise. Now, lest you think it sounds like a lot of historical gobbledygook, let me tell you what it's saying. It's saying, right now you're divided. When we finish this invasion, you're going to be divided. The Jordan will separate some of the tribes. But right now, I want you to prepare yourself for battle, and I want you to go into the battle helping one another. I learned from that a principle. Here's the third one. They forgot their differences and they closed ranks in unity. They forgot their differences and they closed ranks in unity. He says, I want you to forget what tribe you're a part of. I want you to forget the past and all of those distinctions related to boundaries. I want you to roll up your sleeves and take the challenge like one great army.
Operation Assimilation. That's the title of today's message from Chuck Swindoll. And we're drawing helpful insight from the book of Joshua, where we find the Hebrew nation banding together under the leadership of Moses. Today's sermon is just one of 12 in the series called Dropping Your Guard. To purchase either the CDs or the downloadable audio files, go online to insightworld.org. Well, with June right around the corner, we're celebrating another milestone at the ministry, and we thought you'd enjoy hearing a brief, reflective conversation between Chuck Swindoll and Insight for Living board member Roger Kemp.
Chuck, this month marks our anniversary at Insight for Living, and those occasions are always good times to celebrate. Anniversaries also make us a little nostalgic as well, especially after 34 years.
Isn't that remarkable? 34 years. Sometime Cynthia and I look back and we'll say, could it really be that long? As we remember, you know, it all starting in the garage and growing into our bedroom and then finally a little room at a bank at the place where we were living there.
Nostalgia is a good thing, but sometimes it tends to flavor maybe in a little way the way we look at the past.
Sort of the rose-colored glasses as we look over our shoulders. Somebody wrote, nostalgia is the sandpaper that removes the rough edges from the good old days. That's not a bad statement. And, of course, we enjoy moments like that. It was a number of years ago, Rog, that Cynthia and I took a drive down to Houston where we knew our childhood and, in fact, all the way through our marriage there and then the first couple of years of marriage. And it was nostalgic. It was. And you forget, you know, what it was really like back then until you're on site and you see it.
Well, one of the takeaway lessons, of course, is that God has been faithful.
Yes.
And certainly at Insight for Living, that's the case.
And that's historically true. That's not nostalgia. Mm-hmm. That takes us back. In fact, it's like it was in the days of Joshua. You may recall they did a stack of stones. Mm-hmm. We call them today the stones of remembrance.
Right.
And they put those stones in place right at the site that would remind generations to come of God's everlasting faithfulness. In fact, there's a statement made in Joshua 4, so that all the peoples of the earth may know that the hand of the Lord is mighty, that you may fear the Lord your God forever. Isn't that a great line?
Yeah. We're called to do that. We're called to remember our history.
We are. Something happens when we do that. For one thing, in my life, I find I become more grateful. As I look back, I realize not often because of something, but in spite of something, God came through, mm-hmm. and I'm so thankful.
You know, we hear from listeners all the time who tell us, frankly, their history is interwoven in our history. They see their lives reflected in the years that they've listened to Insight for Living.
Right. That reminds me, Raj, I want to say something to you. I'm talking to you, not somebody sitting in the room with you or somebody you're related to or a group of people at your church. Let me say this to you. We do need to hear from you today because your history is wrapped up in ours if you've been a part of this ministry through the years. So don't just assume somebody else is going to respond as a part of this need we're facing. I want you personally to call us. I want you to be the one who writes that letter. We even like reading your own handwriting. That's a neat thing. Or you may wish to go online. Give a generous donation in honor of these many, many years we've known each other in this way. And, of course, we give it to the glory of our God, like Joshua put it, so that all the peoples of the earth may know that the hand of the Lord is mighty. So thank you in advance for being generous and remaining a part of our history.
All right. Thank you, Chuck. And yes, this is a very strategic season for the ministry. It's important we hear from you. Let me give our contact information a couple of times so you can jot it down. Choose one of two ways to respond to Chuck Swindoll. If you're listening in the United States, you can call 1-800-772-8888 or go online to insight.org. It's healthy for any ministry, any family, any believer to look back on God's faithfulness. It's what gives us confidence that we can step into the future with His provision. And when you give a donation today, we want to send a helpful reference tool that dovetails naturally with today's study in Joshua. It's called Insight's Bible Application Guide, Joshua through Esther, a life lesson from every chapter. When you give a donation to Insight for Living today, we'll send a copy with our thanks. We mark this 34th anniversary, as Joshua said, so that all the peoples of the earth may know that the hand of the Lord is mighty. Let us hear from you today. If you're listening in the United States, call 1-800-772-8888. Online, go to insight.org. I'm Dave Spiker. Join us again Tuesday when Chuck Swindoll continues the topical series, Dropping Your Guard, right here on Insight for Living.
The preceding message, Operation Assimilation, was copyrighted in 1981, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2013 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide.